You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. Yesterday morning at 7:54 a.m., Mike Smith, who is a Marine Staff NCO, I thought Gospel would like this music. I don't know if he's a country music guy, but he's from Mississippi, so this was a swag on my part. I got this, I got a message on my Facebook Messenger. Mac, not sure if you're aware of this, but Gospel was killed 3 weeks ago today in a single vehicle accident in Mississippi. Sergeant Major Post and I were planning a road trip down to Biloxi later this month to see him. Because he was one of Mike's Marines, right? Mike Smith. I reckon we'll go down another time to visit his grave. Anyway, keep doing what you're doing. It helps guys like us tremendously. And this guy you're going to meet, right? Known as Gospo. We've all known guys like this in the Marine Corps, right? They're bigger than life characters, right? And they're one of the coolest parts about the Marine Corps, right? Because they're so, if you don't grow up in the South, right, their ways, especially, states like Mississippi, Louisiana, they live different than the rest of us do. And you meet guys like that, and they're just incredible characters that you meet. And if they have, big personalities like some do, then they get to be even bigger human beings. And so I was given Gospel's name by Mike Smith and said, hey, he was in Beirut. I said, what do you talk about? And he said, yeah, give him a call. So I met him. We talked about doing the interview. And so then we did it. And then I crossed paths with him on a, not on a regular basis, but I'd see him on Facebook or something like that. Or I'd see something he posted, and I'd say hey to him. Hey, what's going on, man? And he's just one of those funny guys who always makes your day sunnier, right? As a Marine, in the interview you're going to hear, you can talk about, he talks a little bit about coming home and what it's been like to live with that and how it hasn't been easy to live with, what he lived through in Beirut. And, but the picture that his family posted with the obituary, when you see that, in fact, you can see that right now, I think on the website, go to the podcast page. And, I was talking about Gospel in the first hour. But if you click on that post, you'll see a picture of him, right? He's got spiked hair and his cool-ass sunglasses and his shirt with this white T-shirt with this kind of, cool guy design. It's got a couple of skulls on it with wings and stuff. So Gospel, cool dude, man. And but anyway, I just incredibly saddened hearing the news that he had passed away. So what I wanted to do is I wanted to share this interview with you all as a tribute to him. You know, Gospel was one of those guys who I call post-traumatic winners, and that lives through something that the rest of us only watched, and comes home and tries to resume a normal life when he's been deeply and fundamentally, you know, affected by something. And he struggled with it. But he's one of those guys, though, that is kind of got a magical way about him. And he pulls it off. So, to his family, how lucky you all were to have him in your life. Because not every family has somebody like that. Not everybody has a dad like that. Not everybody has a grandpa like that. And our thoughts and prayers are certainly wished with you. And to those of us who knew him through this interview, I know my life was changed by that conversation, just listening to his words. And so wanted to share this with you. The interview runs about 90 minutes. Yeah, you're gonna get to know Gospel a little bit, and so I just wanted to share this with everybody as a tribute and as part of the way we've learned to celebrate life here as Marines. Life doesn't always go the way we want it to go, and this certainly didn't. But right, it's our duty, lots of us have learned how to do it, and that is to celebrate, truly celebrate, somebody's life. And Gospel's life is a life we're celebrating. So, here you have, Lance Corporal Matt Gospodinovich, right? Known as the mythical character of Gospo here on a Monday edition of All Marine Radio.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Why is the music so long? Because something went wrong that day.
You let me lose my job.
I'm listening to this like, what the hell, man? What went wrong that day?
I don't know what happened. Trust me, the song will end. The song's called Boom Clap by Charlie XCX, though, in case you want to know.
All right, let me tell you how you know something's gone wrong on the radio. Is a bumper plays for an extended period of time. Yeah, that means, like, I don't really know what's going on, but something's wrong because the stuff ain't going right. So, anyway, I think Matt's with us now. Matt, good morning.
Yeah, morning, man. This is Matt.
What the hell, man? I call you four times. You don't pick up the phone?
No shit. I'm sitting here, man, watching Fox News. It didn't ring. I don't know what's going on, man.
Really? All right. So, Matt, how do you say your last name?
Hey, it's Gospodinovich.
Gospodinovich. All right.
You know, I shouldn't interrupt the interview, but I will, man. You can just tell, right? I'm sitting here laughing, right? Because, you know, in the Marine Corps, you meet guys like Gospo, right? And you hear his voice and his way. Yeah, no shit, man. I'm sitting here watching news, my phone, right? And it just, they make you smile, man. Their attitude. And they're a combination of funny and tougher than shit. And the reason why the Marine Corps goes around the world and does whatever it does, and trust me, we do, is because of guys like Gospel. Yeah, go ahead and spit in his face and stand the fuck by, right? And you have dudes like that, and you'd conquer the planet. You can go anywhere. You can do anything. And it makes me smile just hearing his voice and just the funny stuff that he says.
And watching Fox News. News sucks, doesn't it?
Yeah, man. I mean, it is what it is. I'm behind Trump.
Yeah, man. Good luck on that deal, man. I'm not behind either one of them, man. Hopefully the country survives whoever the hell gets elected. And then the two cops getting shot in their cars this morning.
Well, that sucks, man. I was a trooper for like 7-8 years. I think I was in the Marine Corps, and I was a deputy sheriff for several years, so I feel for them.
Why'd you stop doing it?
Man, it just wasn't, I wasn't exciting enough, I guess, man. I don't know. It got boring.
Oh, really? And then you left there to go do what?
Well, now I'm in the casino business.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Always something going on in the casino.
There is.
Really? Is it as exciting as, because first of all, the cast of characters that hangs out in a casino, that's a different group of the population, yes?
It is, man. There's casinos all over the country now.
Yeah.
You get a lot of old people, a lot of young people. Just it's just always something going on. It wasn't. I don't know. I just got bored being a cop.
So talk about. All right. So first of all, let's learn about you.
Yes.
Before we talk about Beirut, born and raised where?
Born and raised in Biloxi, Mississippi. My dad was a shrimper. It's right on the coast. Biloxi's on the coast. I grew up working on a shrimp boat. And,
just like that Forrest Gump shit?
Pretty much, man. It's a lot like that, yeah. A little bit bigger town. It was a resort community. We're right on the beach on the Gulf of Mexico. But at that time, there's the big fishing industry. Fishing, shrimping, crabs, stuff like that.
Wow. All right. So not exactly like the movie, but, you know, not too dissimilar, right?
Not too dissimilar, no.
Okay. All right. So how does the Marine Corps get on your radar as a young kid growing up in Mississippi?
Man, it's just something I always wanted to do. I just used to love John Wayne. war movies, I went in when I was I wish I still had it, though. When I was 14, I wrote to a Marine recruiter. And just for some information, and they sent a letter back, said, we appreciate your interest in the Marine Corps, but since you're only 14, we'd like you to stay in high school and get a diploma and then come see us. And they sent me a T-shirt and a decal, I think, but I don't have the letter anymore. But that's what it did. I was, I think, a junior. When I turned 17, I went in and saw a recruiter and he said, sign me up. And I delayed for almost a year, 11 months and some days before you know, graduated, and then I went to boot camp.
But it was simply you watching war movies, and that's how you developed your – so you never considered the Army? It was just the Marine Corps?
No, man. I've always been a Marine, I guess, even as a kid.
Wow. Well, let me tell you, and I was the same way. I think tremendously influenced by those movies. And then, I grew up in California, and then when I got down to San Diego, you know, you saw all these Marines, and they were always,
yeah,
they're always fit-looking guys, and looked good in their uniform. I thought, yeah, those guys are the deal.
That was for me too, man.
Wow, wow. All right, so you joined the Marine Corps what year?
1981.
You go to recruit training in?
Paris Island.
Paris Island. All right, and so they make a man out of you. And did you go in open contract?
No, I went in. I signed. I got a combat arms. And when I was in boot camp, at the end of boot camp, they sit you on a quarter deck, and your senior reads off your MOS. So I got a 0800, which is basic cannon there. Then you go to cannoneer school. You get 0811, which is field artillery.
All right, so you do that, and then you get assigned to. Is that when you get assigned to Charlie Battery 110?
Right. Went to Charlie 110. I remember when I walked in the squad day, man. They had all just got back from Panama for jungle training, and these are some rough looking guys, man. These are just what I thought it would be. They were in the back of the squad bay cleaning the M60 machine guns and cleaning weapons and everything. And, well, who are you? Told them, well, come here, boot. Let me show you how to clean a machine gun. So that was my first day at the battery.
You're living in the barracks, right? Living in the squad?
Right, yeah, back then.
Squad bay.
The whole time we had squad bays.
NCOs had their curtain, right?
Well, not for a while. They
really? They didn't have
it? They commandeered the back end of the squad band, put a curtain there with the little corporal chevrons and sergeant chevrons hanging on. I think it was just a poncho liner, but yeah, they had it blocked off.
And that thing, but truth be told, though, that was sacred. You did not wander back there
looking
for shit, right?
Absolutely not.
No, there's sacred things in the Marine Corps, man. Once that poncho went up, you did not fuck. That might as well have been the Iron Curtain, man. You did not. You go jacking around.
Yeah, well, especially not a boot-ass private, you know. I got pretty salty there. You know, I could go talk to him, after a couple of years, but.
Not when you got there. All right, let's talk about it. So you get there, and what year is that? Did you get there? 1981.
That's gonna be 81. Yeah, 81.
So you get there in 81. Beirut happens in October of 83. So talk to us about your 2 years in the fleet. Was it what you expected? And how'd you go?
Yeah, man, it was great. We were in the field probably at least 2 weeks out of the month, 2 or 3 weeks out of the month, doing a lot of training. When I got there, we had the 105 howitzers, which, I mean, on the breach, they had like 1943 stamp, 1944, so these were, World War II era guns, but
wow.
We got real good with them. We all liked them because it's small, you can move them around real easy and everything.
Right.
But, you learn everything, how to take them apart, and we did a lot of field ops. We threw to Fort Bragg several times a year. I've been to 29 Palms. We go to cold weather training. Just regular fleet stuff, man. Doing floats. We did NATO floats. A lot of good liberty, a lot of good times.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I've never been to the Met. I've been a, I'm a Pendleton guy, so I've never been. The Met floats look like something you dream about as a Marine.
The only Met I went on was to Beirut. I was on Austin. We did several NATO floats, but the only Met, which wasn't really a float, we got on in a. We got on in North Carolina and we went straight to Beirut.
That wasn't a good one. What's best Liberty port you were ever in?
Amsterdam.
What the hell?
Man, we got a week of Liberty in Amsterdam. We'd have formation at like 0700. You know, they take roll call and find out who's in jail or whatever, and first sergeant have to go get them, and then Liberty again till 07 the next day. That was a lot of fun, man.
Amsterdam. How the hell were you up in Amsterdam? That was the NATO flight?
That's where they dropped us off. I don't know. Yeah, it was a NATO. It was I think it was a cold weather. It was Norway. We have pre-positioned stuff up there that we have to go once a year, and we take them out and clean them, shoot them, and, you know, we train with the whoever was Norwegians, and that was back still during the Cold War when we was worried about Russia coming across.
Yeah, we wanted a piece of those Russians.
Well,
and that's how we were going to get it.
Right.
So you're doing that, and you're living life as a Lance Corporal, PSC.
Right. Yeah, man. Just having fun, man. Being a Marine, jarhead, dumbass, young, you know, full of cum, jarhead.
All right, talk to us about you guys get ready to go to Lebanon. What was the preparation like? Now you guys were going to go get in the middle of a shooting conflict. What do you remember about the preparation headed over there?
Well, man, it was pretty. We didn't have a whole lot of notice. It wasn't. I don't recall how long. Maybe. A couple of months, and we had just transitioned over to a new weapon system, the M198 howitzer, which is a 155, which is a lot more complicated, bigger gun, takes a bigger crew, shoots a bigger round, and is a lot more, you know, training to do. So we've been training our asses off on them pretty much constantly for this, you know, after they swap the guns out. So it was just more of the same, you know, train, and I was excited. A lot of the guys were excited and everything, but the NCOs, mainly staff NCOs, the officers and all were trying to calm my expectations down. You know, they said, this is a political deal, you know, gotta have a lot of discipline, self-discipline, and, you know, we're probably not gonna be any shooting, probably not gonna be what you expect of it, but it turned out differently. But right.
So that's the lead up, and then you load up where do you guys load up? At Morehead?
Morehead City. Well, we get there, and it's I guess a couple weeks was on the ship, and just more of the same, more training. We had Amtraks on the boat. We did some training, jumping Amtraks off and on and stuff like that. And then when we finally get there, they load us up on them landing boats and we hit the beach and then it's go time. You know, we get to our position there, which we had a fire base. Which is kind of reminded me of K-Sign, the pictures I've seen of K-Sign. It's kind of on a hill.
Right.
And we get in and we just dig our guns in and start fortifying the position and everything.
Well, man, let me stop you. One thing that you notice, for those of us who've never been to Beirut, and you read about the Marines in Lebanon, I had no idea until I looked at it on Google Earth, how small of an area that is. You guys were sitting at the airport, and it's not, what, 2 kilometers to the mountains that are looking straight down on the airport?
It's amazing. A little bit further than that, I think, but it's not much. We were right, our ass was facing the Med, and we were facing the Shoof Mountains there.
Right.
So we were right. It's a small strip. It's a small strip there.
Yeah, I got the map out, and I was like, holy shit, man. Everything you guys did is under observation from those mountains, right?
Oh, absolutely, man. I mean, that's something that was strange for a guy from Artie. Because when you shoot a howitzer, you there's what they call direct fire when right. You shoot it the way, when it's a broken arrow type situation where you just lower the barrel and shoot straight at the enemy. But Artie, you never see where your rounds are hitting. And there were many, many missions we shot that you could actually see because we're hitting sniper positions or mortar guys or whatever in the mountains, and you could see where your rounds are hitting, which was pretty strange from an artilleryman's perspective.
From the V in the tarmac at the airport to if you go straight west, I'm using my Google Earth, to the top of the mountains. It is 1.79 miles. What the hell? How about kilometers?
Perspectives.
You're right. 2.6 kilometers to the top of that ridgeline.
Well, it seemed further from them, but that's
pretty goddamn that's pretty goddamn close though, man.
Yeah, man.
Holy shit! No, I didn't realize it. Now that's if you go due west. It looks to me, now as I zoom in on this shit, closer to that, the Chief Mountains are like right on top of the airport. Yeah, 2 kilometers, because as towards the southern part of the runway, the mountains swing towards the runway, and
right.
So it gets a little bit closer. Then they get further as you go to the north, but wow.
Yeah, the BLT was on the other end, yeah.
Right. So so tell us, when we look at, if you look at a picture of the airport, where was Charlie Battery, and what were you guys doing?
We'd be to the left. We were about 1,000 yards, maybe 1,200 yards to the left of the BLT headquarters.
Now, where the hell, where was the BLT headquarters?
Well, that way, it was It was the airport terminal. It was Beirut International Airport Terminal.
Okay.
And they, when we got there, they turned it into the BLT headquarters. So
okay, so as I'm looking at the V in the runways, right in the center of the V.
It would be, I don't know which direction-wise, but with the end of the runway, the mountains, curve in towards the end, it would be the other end. The BLT headquarters was at the other end.
All right.
If it's still, I mean, I don't know if the
No, I'm just looking to see on a, like, I'm looking from an aerial view, and I'm looking down.
And if those are, I don't know if the airport's still there.
It's still there.
Now, if it is or not, but that's where it was positioned at that time. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about, and so where were you guys relative to that? And what were you doing?
On the 23rd?
Yeah, on the 23rd. But did you guys rotate around? I know some of the line companies rotated.
No, we were the only Artie battery there.
So you stayed put.
We did patrols every day.
Right.
But we, our position, we did move. We did move to, closer to the beach after the 23rd, sometime at the beginning of November, they moved the whole position almost right on top of the airport.
Okay.
Towards the end where the mountains curve to.
Okay.
To
the southern end.
Yeah.
All right.
But on, the night of the 22nd, we got reports and intelligence was saying that we may get hit by Syria, Syrian airstrikes. Be prepared for Syrian airstrikes. So
what?
We had to sleep. Well, that's what they that's what they told us.
Those intel guys, right? Have they ever been right?
No, not that I know of.
Exactly.
It's above my pay grade. But and we even had a CI guy in a position. They had a I'd never seen one before at the time. It was a big Chevy van, but it was four-wheel drive. It looked like a monster truck. It had big monster tires on it, and they had it painted a OD green, and, you know, they hop in and out of the van around. You weren't allowed to talk to them, but anyway, we're supposed to get hit by Syrian jets, so we had to sleep on the gun line, which we had GP tents, like behind our guns is where we lived, and then, you know, right out the door is your, you know, is your assigned gun. And, we had to sleep on the gun line that night. And then, you know, about 6:30 in the morning, it's when all hell broke loose.
All right, so you're sleeping on the gun line, and how far are you from the barracks?
Like you said, about 1,200 yards.
And you're down to the south of the barrack.
Right.
Okay. I'm looking at an old image, and it looks like the terminal was kind of near the coast and you can correct
right.
me if it was it, the barracks was near the coast. Next to one lane of the airport, but it wasn't inside the V, it was outside the V.
Okay.
Alright, so anyway,
sounds
close?
Yeah, it's been a long time
wow.
Some things I'll never forget, some things I'm, you know, sketchy on, but.
Alright, I want to ask you about, so that morning, it's one of the largest explosions, conventional explosions since World War II. Right?
Well, we were told
the largest. I've read the largest conventional explosion. Since World War II.
Right. It's like 12,000 pounds of equivalent of TNT, whatever they used.
Sorry, what were you doing when it happened?
Well, I was asleep. We were on a Sunday morning.
Wait, hold on. I got to take a break. My guest is Matt. Say your last name, Matt.
Gospo Dinovich.
But he's known as Gospo to his friends, right?
Gospo, yes, sir.
Right. Speaking the gospel, is that what you do?
No, it's just...
especially late at night?
Too hard to say gospel out of it.
Exactly. Gospel. Anyway, Gospel joins us here on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network, and we're talking about Beirut. He was a Lance Corporal at the time. He was in Charlie Battery 110, and kind of where they were, what they were doing, and anticipating Syrian airstrikes that morning. And we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the events of that day and the aftermath. So hang in there with us as we continue Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You know, listening to the interview almost a year later.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You know, just listening to this makes me smile. And again, you meet guys like Gospo in the Marine Corps, and they're the best. So here's part two of the interview. Our own tribute here on All Marine Radio to a brother, to somebody who came on and shared his story. He talks about living with the events of that day. And I'll tell you what, this is what makes All Marine Radio different. And this is why this is such a cool interview and why guys like him have my undying respect, right? Because it's not just talking about what happened in Beirut, right? Because you can get a book, you can go online, you can find out about that. But what nobody talks about, right, is what it was like to live with that, right? No mental health treatment for guys like that, right? He talks about his panic attack, how he tried to go get help from the VA. And then ultimately, Gospel talks about how social media played a part in his learning how to live with what he had gone through all those years later. And that social media, for all its evils, is one of the great tools that reconnect us with each other. And that's hugely important, that reconnect us with this incredible tribe that we're a part of. And for us, I mean, we get to meet, hang out with guys like Gospel. So this is the second half of that interview.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I played Toby Keith music again today when I was introduced in the first segment. I guess we're going to find out if he likes the music, because I'm sure I'll ask him.
Little country music for Gospel. But I would encourage you, there's some, in the process of doing these programs and just doing the research, you know, so you can act like you're halfway intelligent. When you speak to guys like Gospel about something that's incredibly important in their life, there's some pretty amazing stuff that has been preserved. There's a picture of the chaplain, of the wall of plywood, just a piece of plywood that was painted in the chaplain's office in Beirut in the barracks, and it says peacekeeping. There's a cross, there's a Star of David, and then there's a tablet that has the Ten Commandments on it. So there's some pretty sober reminders of that day, and there's also a picture. There's several pictures of the memorial with everybody's that's in right at Camp Johnson at Camp Lejeune. And so, pretty sobering stuff. And I remember when they dedicated that. And but it's a beautiful place now, but that all the vegetation has grown up around it. And the proverbial Marine with his flat jacket on and his sleeves rolled up, steel pot on, and his M16 standing there, and the names of everybody that were lost that day on the wall. So if you've never been there, I would encourage you to. If you're ever in the vicinity, go check that out. It's very beautiful. 241 Americans were killed that day. 220 Marines and 18 sailors and 3 soldiers. So, 44 years ago today. Gospel was very cool about doing this interview. You can tell he's a good dude. And he loved being... loved being a Marine, and you certainly hear that as he talks with affection. So I'll get out of the way. Here's the second part of that interview. And again, you'll hear more from Beirut. Eric Hamill joined us last year. He's written a book about it, and I know he was telling me it's tough for him to talk about because you know the situation these guys got put into. And some of the decisions got made, he feels pretty strongly about. He told me that he doesn't think the Sun has a lot of the information concerning what happened there has yet to see the light of day. So interesting stuff. So you heard the interview that I did with him last year. Very interesting, I might add. So we continue on a day good Marine and artilleryman by the name of Matt Gospodinovich joined the All Marine Radio a year ago.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Kind of creepy. I played the same bumper music.
Hump Day in the United States. Game 7 of the World Series tonight. Mike Musselman's birthday. Playing a little country music, so my boy Gospo from Mississippi relaxes.
It's the Gunner's birthday?
Exactly. Don't need him doing anything crazy on the program this morning. Because he does work at a casino, and we know what goes on in those places. All right.
The interview happens on November 2nd. I just remembered. Hence the World Series, Game 7, hence the Gunner's birthday. But a good reminder. I'll butt out.
Gospo, I got a couple emails for you, and we'll get to those in a minute. But talk about that morning. So your days in Beirut, if you were QRFing and doing infantry stuff, you were out patrolling, and then did you rotate onto the gun line and have days where you were a gun bunny?
Yeah, well, we're always a gun bunny.
Okay.
We would just have, you know, the big gun crews, you know, we'd have 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 guys, a gun crew, and each day, you know, the patrols rotated, the react force duty rotated, you'd have 2 or 3 guys from each gun. Today you got to go on patrol. Tomorrow you're on react, and it would just on. You know,
okay.
Rotate. If you're in the compound, you're a gun bunny. You know, if you're out the compound, you know, once you walk out the fences, then you're a gun.
All right. Talk about your day. Talk about going patrolling out in Lebanon, in Beirut. What was that like?
Man, it was, I enjoyed it. Everybody, you know, you want to get out of the fence. You want to get in the shit. You want to see what's out there and do what we do. We had some pretty messed up, rules of engagement.
Talk to us about it because, you know, I think it's hard for Marines to believe that you guys operated under that shit. So, talk to us about the rules of engagement for a Lance Corporal out on patrol.
Well, you know, inside the compound, you can't have a magazine in. Of course, you know, if we're taking fire or something, then you do what you got to do. But inside, we weren't allowed to walk around with our magazines. We had rounds in the magazines, but no magazines in the weapons. And when we go on patrol, once you get outside the wire, we could put a magazine in the weapon, but you couldn't chamber around. So, you know, when you're walking and you can't chamber around, you start taking fire. If you get some raghead shooting at you with a 45, you can't open up with a 60. You'd have to return fire in kind with a handgun or walk up. But that's the way.
That's fucking crazy, though. Did you guys think it was crazy, or did you guys ignore it?
Of course. Well, you know, it.
You can say it.
I'm on patrol. I never got in a firefight on patrol. Any time rounds started coming in and out, we were in a position on our fire base. Okay. I didn't. I know the guys. The grunts, you know, in the perimeter of the airport, they were getting hit all the time. I never got in a firefight outside the wire. We returned a lot of fire from inside with the 50s and machine guns and 50s, 60s, and of course we had a lot of fire missions with our howitzers, but. We even had a little card, like a little laminated card they gave you with all the rules of engagement written down on it.
Unbelievable. You had to return, like, he shoots at me.
Exactly.
And I've got to shoot at him. fucking crazy bullshit, man. That's like crazy diplomatic bullshit that you shoot at me, man, you're going to get dead, and whatever we... Look, we're not going to open up the New Jersey on your ass unless you're up in the mountains fucking with us, but...
Well, we did, Jersey.
Yeah,
man.
I know.
It was awesome to see today, they.
Hey, what was that like to see?
Well, man, they were shooting right over our fucking head. It sounded like a freight train going over. Those are some big-ass guns, and, I mean, those mountains, you could literally see chunks of mountain disappearing. I mean, it was quite a sight to see.
Supposedly, that's the thing that pissed them the fuck off.
Well, I think we pissed them off a little bit too, because we shot about 30 white phosphorus rounds one night and lit up a town. But
started on fire.
Yep. It was that was pretty awesome too to see. At nighttime, it was quite something. You could hear I'm not going to say that, but it was pretty awesome to see.
All right, so you're patrolling. You're operating under these pretty restricted rules of engagement. That's daily life. And when it's October, on the day it happens, the Sunday morning it happens, how long have you been there? How long has the VLT been there?
Let's see. We got there in May, I think. May, beginning of May. So it was getting towards the end of our rotation. From May to November, we were leaving in November. So it had steadily gotten worse. When we first got there, you know, nobody shot at us. There was firefights going on all the time between all the different factions. Even the LAF, we saw many times where they were having firefights amongst themselves, different outposts, because we're kind of up on a hill, and you can see right, you know, 200 yards down the road here, they got a roadblock on the highway road. They would check IDs or whatever the fuck they did, and then it was like the Lebanese Armed Special Forces, which they ran around in a tiger stripe camp. He's like Vietnam looking shit. And, but I saw several times where they got in a firefight with themselves. They're supposed to be on the same side, you know. But shit started. It got progressively worse. We'd watch the firefights, and then slowly, you know, a stray round would start coming my way, and then shit would be flying all the time. Towards the end, shit got bad. It got pretty bad the closer to the 23rd it got.
All right. So was there other than the Syrian stuff, the Syrian airstrikes? And there's no other indication that the locals were getting more combative.
Well, like I said, it did. We never knew who. You know, I'm a Lance Corporal. They didn't tell me much. I just know, you know, they shooting at us a lot more than they used to, and you know, we're having to shoot back and getting these bunkers and shit. You know, that was all factionals, the Druze and the Shiites and everybody. We never really knew who the fuck. Who's who, or we just, you know, this is out there. Where your balance point, that's your bad guys. And the LAF, the Lebanese Armed Forces, they wasn't much, man. We're supposed to be there to back them up, protect them. And they even sent our battery. I don't recall if they gave them some of our guns or they brought some more howitzers in. And they took a couple guys from each crew, sent them up to the Chief Mountains, and they train these guys. They put them through a school and everything,
right.
3, 4, 5 weeks, so they could have their own artillery support. And, you know, we trained them, you know, turned them loose. The guys come back, their first fire mission, they shot a few rounds off, and they end up getting wiped out by counter-artillery fire. So they killed all of them guys and blew up all our guns.
Wow.
They just wasn't very well trained. I think, well, it's not politically correct, but all the real men in Lebanese Army had been killed a long time ago, and these were just boys and people off the street, it looked like.
My guest, Matt Gospodinovich. Did I come close?
Yeah, that's pretty good, man.
All right, thanks. I appreciate that. All right, so we kind of painted a picture. I got an email. I'll ask you real quick. Mac, I'm listening here with fascination, listening to Matt talk about the New Jersey firing. How far off the coast would they be when they fired? Would they be relatively close? And it sounds like it would have been awesome to feel that stuff going over your head and blowing shit up.
It was kind of scary, but it was awesome, man. I mean, you could see the ships. I would imagine they were more than a couple miles offshore. That's a big ass ship, and it looked big from where I was at, and I was on on shore. But it's just a roar. I mean, just a M16 round sounds like when it snaps going over your head. These things were.
Holy shit! But you could see the mountains being rearranged when they impacted.
Absolutely, man.
Wow.
Absolutely, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's talk about that morning. So it's Sunday morning, and what were you doing? And what were you going to do that day? What was the plan?
Like I said, Sunday's usually a down day. You know, everybody's got their own, everybody's got duty, but, if you don't have duty, Sunday's a down day. But, like I said, we were on alert that night, stayed up all night, then they said, I just shut it, just everybody sleep on the gun lines. We gotta be ready for whatever happens. And then, it was like 6:30 in the morning. I was actually just sleeping on a poncho liner next to the ammo pit. When the explosion went off, it seemed like it lasted forever. I mean, it's a noise that it can't be described. I mean, it's like I don't know if you've been been in a thunderstorm or something. Lightning hits right outside your window and it booms and everything shakes. Well, it's like that times a thousand. I mean, you could feel it. The ground shook like an earthquake, and it just continued to roar. I mean, it's hard to explain. And I thought, well, these fucking guys, they're dropping bombs on us. I thought it was like a jet, like a Harrier. I know Harriers scream when they come over. That's what I was thinking in my mind. That's a jet screaming over, and they're dropping shit on us.
Right.
But then it kind of... dust went everywhere, flew, knocked people out of the racks, some guys were sleeping on cots, I was just on the ground, but, and then you jump up and look around, well, the BLT headquarters building, I mean, you could see it from my position perfectly, it was part of the skyline, it was like a six-story building, this was a big building, and, we looked over there, and it's just a big, giant mushroom crowd, like Hiroshima, literally, was a mushroom cloud like a nuke, And, it took a minute or so for everybody to well, what the fuck's going on, so I wasn't even on React Force that day, but I grabbed my shit and I ran to the Amtrak's, and they were loading up, getting ready to go, and I told Lieutenant Kelly, who was our platoon commander, I said, look, I'll tell you if anybody, let me get in here, he's got to we. We're full. Everybody, were you on a React Force? I said no. And he had been hearing the radio traffic from the BLT. And he said, anybody don't want to go, you can get off now. Gospel, jump on. Nobody's going to say nothing. It's pretty bad over there. And somebody got out.
No shit?
Yeah. And I got in. Tailgate comes up, and we're doing
Wait a minute. So there was no doubt gospel was going on, right?
Well, man, I wanted to go, man. I mean, that's just, that's why I joined the Marine Corps, to be a Marine. That's what we do.
All right, let me ask you a question about the dude that got out. Is he still around?
I don't even recall, I don't even recall who it was. It was just somebody didn't want to go. I mean, I really don't. And nothing was said ever again. I don't think when I got back I knew who it was. At the time, I even paid attention to who got out.
Right. When Marines need help, Marines don't say, not me today. Normally, my experience in combat, you yell help, motherfuckers come, and they don't. Right. It doesn't matter. Like just like you got in that truck. Like I don't know what's over there. I don't know what I'm going to find, but I'll tell you what, if there's Marines there and they need my help, I'm all in.
I don't know, and and I've thought about telling that story or not, whether I should, but it's, that's what I'm
saying. You know what? This is the great thing about All Marine Radio Gospel. We talk about the truth, what's real, and because we all deal with it, and it ain't easy, and but it's I think it's a place where we come to, you know, to be honest and candid and share our emotions with each other. You get in, the truck and go over there. Describe what you found.
Right. Well, like I said, it's an Amtrak, man. You know, it's closed in. The gate comes up. The back gate comes up, and we hauling ass over there, and I can hear. You can hear the radio going, I fucking hate shit, man. I mean, people screaming and cursing and what the fuck. And so it's a very short trip over there. And I got my mind on the way.
Hey, Gospel, and that's not how the radio is most of the time, all the time.
No,
right?
Absolutely. No.
The radio is very orderly, right? And now,
exactly.
Now it's gone cuckoo.
People just, you know, it's freaking out. And, I got my mind what the BLT looks like, which gonna, you know, when his tailgate comes down, we'll just, you know, something's gonna be bad, but, we get there, and it was like a movie, man. It's slow motion. I can hear the hydraulics on a tailgate of that Amtrak going down slowly. And it's just like another world. When it hit me like a ton of bricks in the face, like, what the fuck? That's not what I thought I was gonna see. It's just, complete devastation. A big pile of just rubble where the BLT was. I mean, I could say BLT, that was our headquarters building. That was a big, huge building, and it's just gone. And there's dead bodies, there's hurt people, guys running around with arms cut off, and, you know, it's just unbelievable, you know, and I'm ready to jump out, and everybody just stopped and looked. For, I mean, you know, for like 10 seconds, and then, you know, it kicks in, and you get out there, and, it's a clusterfuck. Everybody's dead. There's no command and control.
Right.
This is where, you know, Olive Branch was. All we got, we got Lieutenant Kelly. He's on the track here, and he's, you know, y'all stay put. Let me find out what's going on, and, I mean, we didn't. Everybody just spread out and started doing what they could. You started digging through the rubble and helping who you could. I saw some survivors, some guys that were still alive on the outside. But once we started digging, I never found a live person after that. I mean, it was me and Mark Rowley and Arthur Linquito, another couple of Lance Corporals with me. And Art was a small guy. Small frame guy, and he would like climb through holes, you know, in a rubble and shit. And he'd say, "Hey guys, I found a guy down here, but he's dead," you know. So me and Mark would go, you know, just pull the rocks and the rubble off until we get him, and had an area where they were putting the bodies, and we drag him over there. And man, it was a long day, man.
So the building's essentially pancaked, and you guys are working around the edge of the building, and
all over climbing up. I mean, okay. the fucking truck made a crater. I mean, it had to be like 20 foot deep and 30 foot across all the way around. Where he drove right through the front doors of the place,
right?
Before he kicked it off. So, I mean, it was a perfect hit. You know, they were finding shit miles away that had blown way up in the air, and the vehicles and shit a mile away. That just those little jeeps went big back then,
right.
You know. And but we, I mean, we were there about 16 hours, I think, before we finally got relieved. They started bringing guys in off the ships that were offshore to relieve us because. You know, we knew a lot of these guys. I found a guy from a battery, Dennis Thompson. He had been there for mess duty, but we found him, his body. You know, so a lot of guys. You know, it takes a toll on you eventually.
Let me just hit pause there on the events of that day and ask you and ask a personal question. Everybody deals with their own shit. Whether you're a Vietnam guy, an Iraq guy, an Afghanistan guy, or some combination thereof, Korea, World War II,
and I've talked with guys from all those conflicts, that stuff is burned into your brain forever. The smells of the day, the sounds of the day, the sights of the day. How have you dealt with that, Gospel? I mean, we didn't have PTSD back then, you know. You just you came home and you were supposed to deal with your shit.
Exactly. And I didn't deal with it for a long time. And it's not till I guess social media, Facebook, since I started getting on Facebook 6, 7, 8 years ago, and started connecting with guys from Charlie Batter, guys from the BLT that I was with. Okay. I almost, you know, it was like a dream. Nobody knew, you know, we're starting to get more awareness now.
Right.
But back then, nobody, you know, when I came home on leave afterwards, you know, I just in high school a couple of years ago, I'd be with my guys, what you been up to? I was like, well, I was in Beirut. Well, where's that? Nobody knew what the fuck you was talking about and didn't really care, you know, so you just, you internalize shit. I mean, it in fact, me, I'm cold. I don't, you know, I've been married several times and divorced several times, and it's because I, you know, just the way I've dealt with it. But I have, I've been going to the VA, and they're taking care of me.
They are. How's your experience at the VA, good or bad?
I tell you, you know, I've had nothing but good experience. The Biloxi VA, it's right here in town. I don't have to travel far. I've had I've had good experience with them.
Okay. No, you know, let me just tell you, I think the more guys you talk to, you know, the VA, like every other organization, is dependent upon their people. And in some places, they have good people doing good work, and they do a lot of great work. And then there's other places that they struggle. So we don't.
Yes, I've read all the horror stories and I've seen it, and it's terrible with how some veterans are treated. And I went in totally expecting, you know, to have to fight, you know, to do battle, but they've. You know, I've had nothing but a good experience with the Biloxi VA here, man. So I'm lucky.
Right. Okay. All right. I wanna release the pause button now on that day. So you get relieved after you said what about 16 hours of being at the headquarters?
Right. It was dark by the time. I mean, it was, you know, 6, 7 in the morning when I got there, and it was dark by the time we finally got relieved. And it was still for days. It was a clusterfuck because nobody, there wasn't, you know, there wasn't just any, you know, I don't know who was in charge. I don't know why some of the guys that survived, they didn't know where the fuck they was for weeks because you had Red Crescent ambulances from all over picking up a guy that's alive, putting an ambulance, and just taking him. Nobody knew he was there, gone, whatever. And,
oh, really?
You know, you were here, and I, so-and-so was in a fucking hospital 20 miles down the road. You know, he just come back, you know. So it was,
wow.
it was, you know. But anyway, we finally got relieved. I remember getting back to the fire base, and I had to go on. I had to pull a duty on a bunker, and me and my best buddy in the Marine Corps was Mark Riley. He was right there with me the whole time, and we're just sitting there. And I think that's when the adrenaline finally wore off, and it just everything started, coming down on me. And I mean, you know, I'd never been claustrophobic or anything before, but being in that, you know, seeing what had happened, and I'm sitting in this little bunker, I mean, you know, I kind of had a panic attack at some. I started shaking a little bit and getting nervous. And I remember Gunny Quick, Battery Gunny, had come. He was doing rounds, and he told us, he said, Gospel, Riley, I want to tell y'all, y'all did a great job today. Everybody down there noticed what y'all did, and you're the best guys I had. And You know, he said, you need to tighten up Gospo. Don't lose him now. You know, bear that shit. You're a Marine. And, you know, keep doing what you're doing, man. So, and I guess that's what I did for, I just buried the shit for a lot of years.
Well, you know what, and that's what the Vietnam guys did. I remember talking to my therapist.
Well, Donnie was an old dog green Vietnam vet. We loved him, man. I followed that man to hell and back. He's a, you know, best staff NCO I've ever, you know, ever served on. He's a good guy.
And what did he tell you about it?
Well, you know, I said, Gunny, that shit was terrible. I never seen nothing like that. And he said, guys, bro, look, I did 3/4 of 9, and I never seen nothing like that shit neither, man. Just, you know, y'all did a good job.
And that was it?
Yeah, that was it. And then, you know, the next day, you just keep on keeping on.
Right. No, it's amazing because, you know, I was talking to a therapist, and I said, what do you talk to those guys after all these years? And he looked at me and he said, the same thing I talked to you about. And I said, after all these years? And he looked at me and said, Mac, they never fucking dealt with it. They came home and stuffed it in the jack-in-the-box, shut the lid, and didn't go near the fucking hand crank, man. And I said...
Exactly. And that's what I did. I took, you know, I withdrew. Whenever, you know, I never could get close to anybody or show any emotions or anything. I'm, you know, everybody at Gospo, you'd always say, well, Gospo's cool. Well, I just never, you know, I was opposite of bipolar. I never got mad. I never got happy. I never got nothing. I just, you know, because I'm afraid I'd have to finish having a panic attack I had in that bunker,
right.
You know, when I was 19, 20 years old. That was some horrific shit for a teenage kid to see, you know, when I didn't. Eventually, after many failed marriages, you know, I started listening to what my family was saying. It's like, man, you need to go do something. You're not all, you know, you need to do something.
You're not all right in the head?
Well, you know, I thought I was, the guy at the VA, I told him, you know, well, I thought I was John Wayne, you know, that's why it took me so long to ask for help. And he said, well, John Wayne was a fucking actor, man. And I'm like, well, okay.
Yeah, Gospel, I don't know if you know this, but yeah, that John Wayne was never in the Marine Corps.
I know, man.
Do you know that?
That's good. Yeah.
He never fucking served a day in his goddamn life. I know, but it looked cool as shit.
Yeah, you gotta love it.
John goddamn Wayne. I've got a couple emails for you. Mac, wow, the last corporal's perspective of that day, pretty gruesome. First of all, as a fellow Marine, tell Gospo, God love him, man. Lance Corporal is the backbone of the Marine Corps, getting into that building, looking for people that are alive and pulling out the dead ones. That's the Lord's work, and can't say thanks enough for the Lance Corporal that went and did that day. And we're certainly proud of him and just hope he knows that today. So, Gospo, the little love coming your way.
Well, thank you, man. Simplify that. That means a lot.
Question for him. How soon did things get somewhat back to normal in terms of a routine, or did he stay on that pile of rubble for a while and work it, or did he head back to the guns?
Well, like I said, it was I was there about 16 hours, and then we went back to the gun line, and they replaced, you know, by the next day, everybody, all the recovery and the people at Ground Zero there, were another, they called the air alert force in from somewhere, and they had, you know, they had Marines offshore that had been offshore, but they, I'd been back there, I went back there, but not, you know, not for, recovery or doing any, you know, digging for bodies and stuff. They had,
they brought another guy.
Yeah, they brought in other guys for that, yeah.
Okay, all right. And so you went back to your former employment,
right,
of patrolling,
right,
and being on the guns. All right.
Yes.
Another email. Hey, Mac, awesome interview with Gospo. Loving learning more about Beirut. Also, Glenn's Corporal's perspective, always very cool. question for him. I heard his comment about social media and reconnecting with his guys. Could you talk about that a little bit? Has that helped him being around his friends? Do they ever get together? So, Gospel, those guys that you were around that you mentioned, tighter than tight, yeah? Do you ever get together with them?
Man, I have, like I said, it has been a great help because before the social media, before Facebook, you know, you'd have I had a couple numbers of guys that I'd stay in touch with semi-regularly. But now, you know, we have there's a Beirut veteran site, there's a Charlie Battery site, there's a new Charlie Battery site for the guys from, Desert Storm all the way up to now that's been in combat and everything, which is, it's cool to look at. You know, these are young kids, but it's still fucking Charlie, man. It's the same charging Charlie and everything. But I've dozens of guys now that are in a unit, and we stay in touch on Facebook almost daily. I did go. They have the Beirut Memorial in Jacksonville,
right.
And I made a trip. It's getting on 10, 12, 13 years ago now with a couple guys, and that was really before. That's just through phone calls and stuff. That's before the social media thing. So and now, for some reason, man, I want to go, but I'm not yet ready to go and see everybody and be at that wall. I can't explain it. I don't know. I talk to them on the phone. I see them, but I don't know. I just don't know. There's something still holding me back.
Go.
From going. But they do. They have a.
No, listen. Hey, listen to me. Go.
I want to, man.
No, don't say another word. Just fucking go.
All right, Mike, I will, man.
All right, let me tell you why. There is no warmer place on the planet than being with your battle buddy. None. You know what I mean? And I've been to Iraq twice and Afghanistan once. There is, and I don't care how long it's been since I've seen them. You walk through the door, you see them, and you know, you start with their nicknames, and all you do is, "What's up, motherfucker?" And it is the coolest. You sit down with a drink and you laugh. And they're your boys, man, forever.
Well, I'm going next year. I'm going there.
Yeah, you got to. Mark it down and go. And let me just tell you, I know October 23rd's got to be a brutal day for you every year, but being in their company, man, would be the best. I promise you.
Well, I'm gonna make the trip again, man. I'm gonna make it this next year. I'm going on the 23rd. I sure will.
All right, another email. Hey, Mac, where's Gospel working? What casino? Maybe I'll bump into him. Where are you working at?
Golden Nugget Casino in Biloxi, Mississippi, man. Come see me.
The Golden Nugget Casino in Biloxi, Mississippi. What do you do at the casino?
I'm a dealer, man. I deal cards, roulette, blackjack.
Really?
Yeah.
Can you give us any?
He's working for a living, man.
Can you give us any advice on that?
Don't play. Don't do nothing. You can't win. It's like going to movies, man. It's entertainment. You're never gonna get your $12 back for the ticket. So just enjoy the show, you know.
Okay, so you're going there to have a good time. But
yeah,
but are you kidding me? There's so many dudes, and I'm not a gambler, but I hear them. Oh no, here's my system and. Blah, 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 blah. And I get here. Go ahead, what?
There's no systems for anything, man. Blackjack, maybe. You count cards a little bit, but it's still, joints got you behind an 8-ball when you walk in the door. Which is kind of funny, man, when, you know, Bunchy's always been a gambling town, even before they had legal casinos. They had backroom joints and everything. And so I grew up around it. And when I get to the fleet, man, I mean, in Beirut, in opposition, they had a tent that had a crack game going or a blackjack poker going just about 24/7. We'd have staff NCOs and everything from all around the BLT would come to our position. They'd go up to the tent and gamble. So and it's kind of like I'm still doing what I was doing, man.
Let me just tell you. Now, I don't know, that stuff still goes on. And it should, because there's great camaraderie in those, in those card games, and then even if the guys who are just hanging out in there laughing and having a good time, that's normally a pretty good time. I got a text message question for you. Mac, ask him about falling between a 20-foot snowdrift and a gun shed in Norway in 1984. Talk to me.
Well, yeah, man, that's Sergeant Major Post. Is that Sergeant Major Post or Gunny Smith? One of them. We were in Norway on, I think it had to be that when we had that Liberty. That was that same float. But
oh, that you were in Amsterdam?
Yeah, well, it was that same float. But we were in cold weather training in Norway, and I'm walking next to it. We're all walking next to a damn GP tent, and I mean, I fell in, and I screamed like a little girl, and I'm pretty sure it was Post that grabbed me and kept me from falling in.
You screamed like a bitch?
Yeah, I did, man. I'm sorry. I'm man enough to admit I screamed like a bitch. I don't know when I thought I was going down a crevasse or something, because it was just snow, but I did. He grabbed me and pulled my ass out. Who was that from?
No, I'm not telling you, man. I can't reveal, I can't reveal my sources. We're doing a Wednesday edition of Allmarine Radio here on the All Warrior Radio Network, and we're talking to Matt Gaspo, and he's a Marine in Lance Corporal. How many times did you make Lance Corporal?
At least a couple, man.
All right. Made Lance Corporal a couple times. And was part of the QRF on the morning of October 23rd, 1983, Charlie Battery, that headed over to the BLT, headquarters that was destroyed that morning. Hey, Mac, I got another email. Mac, when Gaspo looks back on it, is there any lesson learned from that, that he thinks about? Does it piss him off, the situation they got put into, the loss of life, and how has he dealt with that? So would he tell Marines now, would he give them any advice?
Man, we Marines, you know, just go do your job. You know, go out and kill fucking bad guys when they let you, and be a Marine, man. We, you know, everybody that's a Marine knows what that means. You know, that's way above my pay grade. Should we've been there? Who the fuck knows, man? I go where they send me. You know, I would have done things differently, but you know, sometimes the diplomacy works. But you know, I think we should have stayed. I don't think we should have pulled out when we did. But again, man, that ain't my call. You know.
Well, you know what? A lot of guys go through that though. The Vietnam guys, they feel that. That, hey man, we lost 58,000 motherfuckers there, and we pulled the fuck out and said, yeah, you know, our bad, didn't work out. And then, you guys in Lebanon, the guys in Somalia, they're pissed, and then, and now we're doing the same shit in Iraq and Afghanistan. We go there, we fight.
Just don't tie our hands, man. If you're gonna send the Marine Corps in, release the hounds, take our handcuffs off, and let us go do what we do. And I promise you, it will be over quickly, and we can get the fuck out.
Well, you know,
no matter where it's at.
But here's the problem, Matt, is that we can't get the fuck out. Because when you knock over some shit like this, you got, you know, in the American, you know, pottery barn, you break it, you own it. And then we're not leaving right away. And then the American people get tired of it, and they say, oh, we need to leave. Well, then why the fuck did you send us in the first place if you weren't ready to stay here? Just like you guys leaving Lebanon. If this wasn't worth doing, then why the fuck did you send us? And now that we got our nose bloodied, we're going to leave like bitches? Fuck that.
I'm with you, Mike.
So, no, I think a lot of guys share that frustration. It's like, well, look, you know, we'll do our shit, right? But don't waste the effort. And I think that's the major frustration I hear. And guys say, yeah, I've learned to live with it, but it's bullshit. In my opinion, it's bullshit. There's some leaders in this country, both general officers and politicians, man. You shouldn't be able to do that shit and just walk away from it and write a book.
Yeah.
If you fuck it up, you got to go on Devil's Island, someplace out in the Pacific, with Amelia Earhart's bones.
Yeah.
That's my view anyway. But Gospel, if you had to, I do this little segment, and I'm going to ask you this question. If you were to, if I have two sons, one's a lieutenant in 3-5, and one's a captain who's now a teacher at the basic school. If they were going to war, and I said, "Hey, Gospel, talk to my kids, give them one piece of advice about going to war, fighting for their country." What advice would you give them? Based on your experience,
as officers, lead from the front, man. You enlist the guys; they notice that shit. They know who's bullshit and who ain't, and who's a good officer, who's not. You know, lead by example. Don't do nothing. Show them. You know, don't do nothing. Don't ask them to do nothing you wouldn't do. And that's the best thing. You know, just be a good officer, man. Lead from the front.
All right. Gospel, is there anything else that we should know about Beirut that I have not asked you, haven't been smart enough to ask you? That you want people to know?
No, man. I mean, we covered everything. It was, the guys, we're proud of what we did, and just never forget. That's the motto. For BLT-18 and 241, that's the body count. You know, just never forget on October 23rd. You know, that's the more Marines were killed than any time since World War II at one pop. It was just say a toast, man. Simplify until Valhalla. You know.
All right. All right. Gospel, you don't mind if I give you a call and bring you back on in case we do a gambling segment, do you?
Man, I'm here for you, man. I'm good at that. I can give you some life.
All right. My mom, the first time I went up when I didn't even know that I was of age, but I grew up in Sacramento, which is about 90 minutes from Tahoe.
Yeah.
So go up there and go to a concert and did a little gambling afterward. So I got home late, and next morning my mom's asking me, "Did you have fun?" I said, "Yeah, it's awesome." She said, "That hotel's beautiful, isn't it? I think Harrah's have built a new one or something." I said, "Yeah, that's crazy." She said, Who do you think pays for that?" And I said, I don't know, like Harrah's does. And she looks at me and she said, "Nope." I said, "Who?" She looks at me and she says, "Suckers like you."
That's the truth, man.
And I said, "Yeah, my mom in our kitchen." I said, "What?" She said, "Look at all those buildings, man. Look at Vegas. Look at Reno. Guess what pays for all of it? The money of fools." And I was like, "Damn, Mom. No, didn't need to go gangster on my ass." But you know what? I know, yes, she was. But you know what? It made sense to me. And I never, I get called, like, I got friends who have their systems and shit like that. "Oh, you know, roulette, it's math. All you got to do is do this." I'm like, "Yeah, look at Vegas tells me that it ain't math. It might be math, but it ain't good math, man. It's bad math." But
like I said, man, it's just entertainment. You can get, most people can go in and have a good time. You know, there are some people that have a problem with it, but fuck, you got drunks and drug addicts and everything else that can't handle, anything in moderation. So, I still enjoy it a little bit, not like I used to, but I've learned a lesson over the years.
All right. Gospel, anything you want to say to your friends that are listening?
I just simple fun, brothers. Charlie, man. I'll see y'all in Jacksonville on the 23rd next year.
All right, man. All right. And next year, after you go to Jacksonville, you shoot me a message, and I want to have you back on. I want to get your thoughts on going there. I happened to be going to school. I was an infantry officer. They augmented me to the Marine Corps, and then they told me I had to become a supply officer. And so then I said, "Oh, I quit. I'm not doing that." And I, but they made me go to school. So I was going to school at Camp Johnston when they built that memorial. And I used to run by it, and I used to stop and look at those guys and that the words on that monument, You know, they came in peace.
They came in peace, right?
Yeah. No, it's beautiful. But the more important thing than the monument is you being amongst the warriors of our tribe, man. And it's the best. It's the best. So anyway, I want to thank you for doing this, man. I appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, man. I really enjoyed it, man. It's kind of therapeutic. I really enjoyed it.
Well, no, I'll just tell you this. What's one of the coolest things about All Marine Radio, other than we can say fuck on the radio, is, and if you can't tell, I like that part of it.
Cool.
Exactly. It's us in our own language. But no, it's guys listening to this from different conflicts. And now they're hearing a guy from Lebanon, Beirut, that went through the same shit that they went through, maybe worse. And then if that guy is doing all right, then, you know, then I should go get help, too. And the goal of all of this is, we don't really talk about it much, is tricking their fucking asses in, don't fucking do it.
No, man.
If you go to that black place, don't fucking kill yourself. Cover down behind us. We'll get you to a better place like we always have.
Just talk to somebody, man. There's hotlines. I had to call a hotline myself that really got me going to get in there, man. And just talk to somebody. Talk to somebody.
And so when people hear you say that, like, fuck, this dude was in that building, and that's the most Marines, you know, like you said, that have been killed at one time since World War II. And maybe, I mean, you know, maybe ever in terms of one, you know.
Right, one.
One attack that have ever been killed in the history of the Marine Corps. And this guy is in the building pulling people out of it, pulling bodies out of it, some of them guys he knows. And if he can do it, well, fuck, I can do it too. And that's the message we want. It's a message of hope. And don't make us go to another fucking funeral, man. Do not do that shit. So, anyway.
Absolutely, man.
All right. God bless you, man.
All right, man. Simplify,
Mike.
Thanks for having me, bro.
Simplify. Our paths will cross one day.
I hope so, man.
All right. And you can buy me something to eat.
Sure, man. Come on down. I'll get you a cup.
No, I don't want that shit. Hey, what's up? Listen to
I
you.
Got you, man.
I'll get you a comp at the Golden Nugget.
I'll pour you some shrimp, man. How's that?
If I come down there, what do we eat in Mississippi? Shrimp?
Man, shrimp, crabs, crawfish. I mean, we got everything.
What's your favorite?
I love them all, man. Crawfish, you know, just a cold beer, some hot crawfish are good, or boar shrimp, you know. Corn on the cob and potatoes boiled up. Those are good.
All right. What's Mississippi's signature dish?
Well, man, you know, the coast is a little different. You know, probably barbecue up north. The coast, it's got a lot of New Orleans influence and Mobile. It's a little bit different than the rest of Mississippi. Biloxi is more like a Florida, coastal beach town. There's 26 miles of beach, runs across the whole Biloxi coast, so it's more of a resort town. We got a lot of influences, French, Cajun, and Italian, and we've got a big Asian, Vietnamese population here.
And so what, the northern part of Mississippi is more more tilted towards Tennessee?
Yeah.
Barbecue?
Rural type stuff, fried chicken, and a lot of soul food.
Right.
You know, turnip greens and red beans and rice, and it's just it's a big, big, huge melting pot down there.
Right, and then on the coast, more of the New Orleans, the Narlins.
New Orleans, Cajun style stuff, Acadian they call it.
All right, Matt, first of all, I want to thank you very much, and on behalf of everybody listening and all your Marine buddies here at All Marine Radio, thank you very much for doing it. God bless you, man. Hang in there, and we'll do this again.
I'd love to. All right. Thanks, Matt.
All right, bud. Take care. There you have it.
That was on November 16th, so coming up on 3 years ago, Gospo. In his own words, You know what? And I'll tell you what, I'm sitting here listening to it, just smiling, listening to the interview. And I've listened to it, you know, more than a couple times. But, no, it makes me laugh. And that's, I mean, and those are the kind of guys who make the Marine Corps such an incredible experience. And I will tell you this. I mean, what I have never gotten over in my life the experience of, you know, something bad just happened. Something, and when I say bad, I don't mean a little bit bad, right? I mean, something bad just happened. And you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know if something else is going to explode, right? You don't know, you know, if you're going to die in the next few minutes. And what do you do? How do you react? And it's guys like Gospo, right, that grabbed the rifle and get in the Amtrak when somebody else got out of it. And never doubt in his mind which direction he was going. And, you know, he dealt with it for the rest of his life. And, you know, it's they're the most intoxicating group of people I've ever been around in my life. And you even hear General Mattis, right? And General Mattis, when he says this, let me tell you who he's got in mind. He's got Gospo in mind. Matt Gospodinovich is who, you know, why Jim Mattis, when he talks about why he stayed in and how you have to love Marines. So listen to this. When he's talking about these guys in this quote.
If you don't love your Marines, then you really ought to get out. The only reason I stuck around that little paying out for 40 years is for the absolute pleasure of serving alongside cocky, rambunctious, disciplined, selfless, unbelievably selfless young Marines. And
and when he's talking about that, he's got Gospo in his head. And General Mattis loves guys like that, right? Right? And, you know, it's what makes the Marine Corps such a different service. And I tell Marines when I go talk, when I do post-traumatic winning, the thing that makes the Marine Corps different isn't anything. I mean, yeah, the uniforms and yeah, all the rest of it. Our recruit training and officer candidate school and all that kind of stuff. But that's not what makes the Marine Corps different. That's training like all organizations do. What makes the Marine Corps different are the people that join us. The people that look at the poster that says, we don't promise you shit, right? We don't promise you anything. That now looks at the video of the craziness that we put people through and says, and has always said, yeah, I want to be part of that. And Gospo like me, right? I don't want to join the military. I want to be a Marine. I want to be a Marine. And so we celebrate his life here on All Marine Radio as we know how to do. And when we say goodbye to Marine, this is how we do it.
Thank you. Excuse me.
So, Fair Winds and Following Seas to Gospo, Matthew Gospodinovich. You know, it's guys like that, honestly, that made me want to join the Marine Corps, right? They were tough guys, and I liked that. I liked that since I was a little kid, right? I thought they were fearless, but they weren't. They just put their fear aside. And there's a big difference. Everybody's afraid. But not everybody puts their fear aside and goes in the wrong direction. But the few and the proud do. And it's guys like that that made me want to be a Marine, that have made me proud that both my sons have been Marines. Good stuff. So, Gospo, make sure the casino gets set up. When we show up, we'll expect to see you there. Thanks for listening on Monday. Tomorrow, you'll hear an interview that I did with Chris Woodbridge. And Woody had a chance to sit down with General Mattis. Yeah, and it's a really interesting discussion. And so, they sat down and interviewed, he and Mary Regner, who's the editor of the Leatherneck magazine. Woody publishes both of them. But, they sat down with Gerald Mattis and Bing West to talk about the book. And the book's really interesting, and one that, you know, one that on All Marine Radio we beat up all the time. The first part of the book is about leadership when he was young, how he learned it. Second part of the book is leadership as a general officer, Desert Storm, Desert Shield. Not, I'm sorry, leadership as a general officer, where you're not with your battalion, your Marines every day, where you know there's too many of them. Then the third part is this growing theme of the responsibility of general officers to make sure the strategy is right. And we talked about this a lot. Not getting the strategy wrong. That vision has to be tight and together before, as a general officer, you get on board with anybody's plan. So it's, you know, so Woody talks about that. Very interesting. So don't miss that. So we'll come to you live from, well, that's already recorded, but the first hour will be live from Quantico, Virginia. So looking forward to it. So until tomorrow, have a great day. Gospo, rest in peace. Get the casino set up. On a Monday, All Marine Radio. Over and out. We'll be right back.